Oh, yeah. We'll start the session with a short mantra station to settle down our thoughts, and then we'll do another short meditation for the same purpose, to have a clearer understanding of the I. We'll do that. Then after the meditation, I'll continue to read the text a little bit further. And then we'll have some questions and answers before the dedication recitation.
Ah. Sa-ga-de.
So the fourth essential point, that is, if I and I, you know, is intrinsically, you know, different from the five aggregates, or ultimately five aggregates, then there are these different fallacies or faults will appear. And as I mentioned, these fallacies are, you know, very much similar to the what we saw in the third essential point. If I is one, ultimately one with the five aggregates, so I will not read that much. If you get the idea, which I said earlier, you will get it, the point, without that much difficulties. So this, page 21, from the bottom, the first paragraph. Just briefly read that before we move to the next section, which is called illusion. So this paragraph is saying, when whether the self has or does not have inherent establishment is sought in this way, thorough reasoning, it is not found to be either one or many, thereby the inherent existence of self is negated. So that is, you know, the not found, is not found to be either one, inherently one, or inherently many with the five aggregates, you know, the, now the meaning of not be found. So that is here really not be found in the sense of, not be found in the sense of, when we analyze, you know, through these different reasons, and constantly, you know, the sort of facing, you know, contradiction or inconsistency, if we, assert as self, the referent object of the eye, you know, eye grasping, you know, as we perceive that is inherent, ultimate, then there are very, you know, long list of inconsistency, and that is here the one of the meaning of not found, not, you know, the is not found. You know, the, and there's one another meaning, is not found, you know, the saying that, you know, the, when if I, you know, if I existed as our self grasping of I, you know, apprehends, that, you know, self-grasping of I, you know, apprehends the I, the self, like a, you know, foundable, like a finger pointable. If I existed as it, you know, our self-grasping apprehends, then it should be found. No, because it appears in our self-grasping apprehends very much foundable, very much finger-pointable, and you know the, and that is another meaning of is not found, you know, either one with the aggregates or many with the aggregates. Thereby, the inherent existence of self is negated. So inherently existent self is negated. Here it is referring to you know the grasping object of the self-grasping of person. You know, the grasping object of the self-grasping person is negated. In this case, negated in the sense of we sort of experience or we find out that is not the case. You know, how the I is apprehended, that apprehension is not the case. You know, not the case. Therefore, you know, Dhammakitti stated, you know, how to remove the affliction is through dealing with the object, you know, dealing with the object of the grasp, object of the affliction, you know, object of the affliction. And this is what here saying negated, negated in the sense of through that, more and more we see inconsistency in that apprehension, and that apprehension will slowly undermine. You know, slowly undermine. It is like a person that whom we have trusted for years, and when slowly we start to see his or her, you know, the sort of manner is not how we trusted, and bit by bit, then we start to lose the trust. You know, and that is what here it is talking about. More and more we see inconsistency in that apprehension of the self-grasping of the person through these, you know, analysis, then that, you know, what it's here, it says, you know, the self is negated, inherent existent self is negated. Here the inherently existent self is negated. You know, if you say that, why inherently existent self need to be negated? Because it doesn't exist at the first place. You know, why we need to negate, you know, if I say the debating yard, you know, the example, why we need to negate, or why we have to suffer, you know, or seek treatment, you know, the horn of rabbit, you know, rabbit's horn to put a hole in our tummy. But first of all, there's no, you know, horn of rabbits. That's a debating yard, you know, argument. So in similar to here, you know, the inherently existent self is negated. It doesn't need to be negated, but it doesn't, because it doesn't exist in the first place. And that is what we need to know, that, you know, that, do you remember that when we are talking about self-grasping of the person, it's a referent object and it's a grasping object. When you talk about it, a grasping object, the manner of the grasping and what is grasped. And here what is negated, the manner of the grasping is negated. You know, what is apprehended doesn't need to be negated. It doesn't exist in the first place. You know, that's what here this word need to to explain in that way. At that time, inherently existent mind will not be found by the reasoning, analyzing suchness. So this is ngata ngayua in Tibetan, I and mine. You know, the I and mine. When the I, you know, inherently existent, I is that grasping, that apprehension is not more in our mental continuum, then, you know, the grasping mind is automatically, you know, the cease, will stop. And that's what this part, and it's quite useful to look at that one. Mm. Now then the next page, page 22, which is the Jason Garbus up to here, like more like a conclusion of need to be a structured, you know, the what you call the structured arguments to counteract this kind of self-grasp, this kind of distorted mind. And if we set up this kind of structured argument, then that same argument can be applied to, you know, the other sort of, you know, like the self-grasping of phenomena, you know, and that's what here the more in this, the last part of this paragraph. So I will not read all that paragraph. So I will say that this part is now concluded. Mm? Now then the next one is here, the title is Illusion. That's on page 22 in this photocopy. Once we have, you know, through this kind of reasoning, you know, analysis, and once we start to understand, you know, the thesis, the full thesis, that is, you know, in our what's called statement, that is, thesis is the combination of the subject and the predicate. That is the thesis, you know, and that means I lacks in true existence, and that is the thesis. Now, through the reasoning, the arguments, the analysis, when we realize, in this case, realize I'm talking about more like the second stage out of those three stages I briefly touched on last 2 days. Listening, wisdom from listening, wisdom from contemplation. And this one, the second one, contemplation or analysis, whatever term that you use. In Tibetan, you know, the terba, samba, you know, samba, they're quite often translated contemplation, in other words, analysis. You know, it is a proper realization, proper understanding. Once through the reasoning, you know, once we are able to see, able to understand the thesis, that is, I lacks true existence, you know, from the listening, from the reading, you know, but from our own, from, as I mentioned the other day, you know, our assumption that I lacks true existence or ultimate existence is not proper understanding. It is just pure assumption, and assumption is drawn from the other people have stated to you, you know, the other people that whom you can trust, they have said that, and so on and so forth. But it is not your own. It is like a saying, you know, asking to somebody before you come in the Gomba, asking to somebody, is Tashi already in? If he or she says yes, then you just assume I'm in, Tashi is in. But that's not proper understanding, you know, the proper understanding. It is just rely on somebody has said to you, you know. Or you will say, oh, that his flip-flop is there, he must be in. And that might be the reason, but it's not proper reason. You know, there's no probation. You know, it is perfectly possible my flip-flop is dodged next to the door and upstairs, you know. the proper understanding needs to be, you know, although in the Buddhist the Chandrakirti, Dhammakirti, you know, have explained one of the inference, yeah, one of the inferences can be drawn from, you know, the trustworthy statement, but that is very complicated inference, and you know the so that, anyway, so this. What it is now where we are moving, the next step is after having you know, our own understanding the thesis through our own analysis, investigations, reasons, when we gain the understanding this I or the self lacks true existence, then, you know, the particularly when that analysis, that an understanding is more grounded, you know, within our, then, you know, our perception towards the, you know, the things and events, including I itself, have a different perception before we have the realization of emptiness. And this is what this now illusion is going on. And there are these many, you know, many sutras have, you know, the what's called demonstrated emptiness through, you know, the expressing, giving these, you know, the analogies or metaphors, using many different metaphors to say, you know, the how things are real, exist, and how they appear to us. And this is what this section is. Tsongkhapa is dealing with this. It's quite a big section. I will not read all because some are. I will read some important part here and there this evening and tomorrow. Before I do that, I want to tell you a story. A story comes from a sutra. I can't remember exactly which sutra now, but it comes from a sutra. And it is the story is related to this, the topic that we are talking about on emptiness. And the story goes like this. There are two people, men, who are very, very good friends, and one is quite very. Skillful, and so on and so forth. Therefore, his family and his lifestyle is very, you know, rich or, you know, good. And his friend, isn't that, you know, sharp, but hard worker. Isn't that sharp and hard worker, and but also not, you know, because not very creative and not very sharp, therefore struggles to upbring his family. Yet he loves his family very dear, and the friend who is very very clever and very creative and very capable keep asking to his friends. Learn some new skills to, you know, to feed his family in a more better way, and so on and so forth. And this the friend B saying, yes, I'll do that, but not really learning that. And one day, this the sharp, this clever friend came with to see his friends with an amazing, amazing, nice horse, extremely beautiful, nice horse. And he came with the horse, and then the horse was tied next to his tent, his friend's tent. Then his friend was just finished their lunch, and he was just resting, and his wife is washing the dishes, and his two children were playing next to his wife. And then this clever, sharp friend sat next to his friends and constantly looking towards his horse. And then, to attract his attention, his friend's attention, his friends saw that, oh, wow, amazing horse. His friend said, yeah, it's very, very nice horse, very comfortable to ride. Do you want to ride? His friend said, I'm not sure, I'm frightened. But no, it's very nice, very nice. If you want to ride, just go and try. And the friend said, okay, I'll try then. He went, and he got on the horse, and his friend make a small, behind the horse, and horse took off. And took off. And left that continent. Left that continent and landed in a nowhere in a small island. Went for hours and hours and hours, flew and landed in a small island. The middle of a big water, sort of running water, and there's a small island. Dropped there. So now he lost everything. He lost his family, lost his children, and now himself was very much lost, doesn't know where he is. And he looked around, and then he thought, it seems there's nobody in this island, no human beings in this island. And he climbed a little bit, in that island, a little bit in a higher place, and he looked around, down there, there's smoke coming out. I thought, there might be people. And he went towards that smoke. And obviously, he saw a lady. A lady, a single. And he thought, oh, no, what is going to do? There's no other human beings. And he asked, is there other human? She said, no, just me in this island. Just me. So now he has no choice, and he stay with this. And he stay for weeks, months. She said, there's nowhere to get out from this island. And he stay with, weeks, months, years. And he got children with this lady. He got three children. One is just, and of course then he carry on his routine things. Now he, lost his previous wife and children. And now, he is in this new island and with new family. And one day, one afternoon, he took his three children. One is toddler, able to walk a little bit, and one, three children, I think, two or three, anyway. One is very small, just, can't walk, just there. And I think, yeah, two. And this one, and then he went to the water to clean families, clothing and so forth. And while he was washing, suddenly this toddler walked in the water and swept away by the water. And he ran. He ran to save this toddler. And while he was doing, a tiger came and took the baby. Now he lost all. And he went back now, he lost everything, and he thought, how he's going to face his new wife, or the wife, you know, the mother of those. And he was crying, pulling his hair, what happened to me? I lost my, you know, those, my wife and my two children, the previous one, you know, the, completely while they were fully alive, I separated. Now I lost these two children. What's going to happen to this poor man? And suddenly, he wakes up. He's crying, but he's so pulling his and he wakes up. And his friends were sitting next to him. And his friends, and he said, I lost all my family. And he said, no, no, you haven't lost anything. Do you remember when I first came, your wife was washing dishes? She's still washing dishes. She hasn't finished washing it. And your children were playing. They're still playing. And he thought, what happened then? Then what happened? Do you remember what you did? Yeah, I ride your horse. Ride that beautiful horse. And that took me to another, you know, continent. And he told the whole story to his friends. And he said, I spent these years with this new wife and our children, all this loss. So, this story is related to the emptiness. You know, the suffering he went through and all those things, it is through his mental states. Anyway, there are other bits in here. That's a very, very nice story. And what's representing here is the wise man is representing wisdom. The man who is, you know, not wise or not sharp is representing ignorance. Through the ignorance, this will suffer. That's what we're talking about, all this story. Yeah, anyway, there are nice names, and it will work in Tibetan, it will not work in
English. What does the horse represent, Geshe?
Sorry?
What does the horse represent?
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you.
So the horse, you know, the horse represents, actually, it is the process, going through process, you know, the different stages going through one continent to another continent. You know, it has the different significance. Anyway, each has, the children have a different name. Wife has a name. Second wife has a name of saying, anyway, there are different names. And nice story in Tibetan. So that is also relevant to here. Now here, if we start to read now, page 22, Jetsun Khyalpa mentioned entire this section under two outlines. And the two outlines are the meaning of setting forth, it is in the middle of that paragraph saying the presentation how, so it's middle of that. The meaning of setting forth illusory-like appearance and the methods in dependence on which illusory-like appearance occurs. So we are going to look at the first part this evening. And what is very, very interesting and very nice for us, here Jetsun Khyalpa gave us this illusory-like, which, you know, the many sutras, which we will see some of the sutras, we'll make quotation in here, this illusory-like has a different meanings. And Jetsun Khyalpa had clearly, you know, the presented those different meanings. So he says this. The first under the first first has two parts, saying the, you know, the, how to say, unerring mode of illusory like appearance, and the fallacious mode of illusory like appearance. And look at the first one in this now, what Jasongkhapa has said, and that will be quite after the quotation, after the that king of meditative stabilization. This sutra, Dingajin Devado, in this sutra, there are many these kind of verses. This is one of the verses, like a mirage, city of Gandavas. Magician. So many these kind of verses in the, you will find in this, you know, King of Meditative Sutras here. One, you know, and also Jasongkhapa said in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, you will find these kind of, you know, the what you call the analogies or metaphors. Now after that, then the last paragraph in that page, it says there are two meanings of the teaching of being like an illusion. Like an illusion. There are two meanings. The meaning of like illusion. In the description of an ultimate truth as being like illusion, it means that although an ultimate truth or emptiness is established as merely existent, its true existence is negated. That's the first meaning, can be understood as a illusion-like. Illusion-like can be understood relation to emptiness or ultimate truth, saying the ultimate truth, you know, the emptiness are like illusion because, you know, they are empty of inherently existent, they are empty, as here it says, stated, saying that it means although an ultimate truth or emptiness is established as merely existence in the sense of, you know, conventionally existence, that's a merely existence, its true existence is negated. So the illusion-like can be understood in this manner. But Jasongkhapa is saying the second one is, you know, the irrelevant, or what we are talking about here in the sutra when you say illusion-like on the, in this, these sutras. And the second meaning is an illusory-like appearance in which an object appears while being empty. And that is here what we need to understand, the meaning of like illusion, or, you know, the illusory-like appearance. Gyumatabu nangwa in Tibetan. Gyumatabu nangwa. It has an illusory-like appearance. Particularly people who have understood emptiness, you know, it has that illusory-like appearance, all the things and events. They have illusory-like appearance, they perceive all the things and events like illusion, because they have understood emptiness, they have realized emptiness, therefore in their, deep down in their mind, you know, what they are perceiving, the things and events towards them, they know that is not like, things and events are not like that. In other words, they are able to see, able to understand, you know, the appearance of the things and events, and the reality of the things and events. They are able to see and understand the discrepancy between the appearance and the reality. People who haven't realized emptiness, that's difficult. You know, the difficult, different shade, the discrepancy between the appearance and the reality. People who have realized emptiness, you know, and this is you will see the you know the like the some of those you know the great movie directors, some of those great movie directors, who are able to produce, you know, some of these amazing sceneries, you know, like very much outside in there, but actually it is in studio. Yeah, and they all are just, if you go back, if you go behind, they all are hollow, empty, nothing, you know. So, like that. But I was told coronation state is not like that. It's like that, where they perform the action. They're completely set, straight. Is it like that? Have you been there? Because you are lucky if you've been there, then if you watch Coronation Street, you know, this episode, there's no taste with that. I will tell you one nice story. This, you know, that was when I was in the monastery, I think 1983 or 84, around that time. A local, you know, the Karnataka state, where the Sera Monastery is located, you know, that state is called Karnataka state, and they have their own language, Kannada. They have their own written language, spoken language, and have a long history, you know, the Karnataka. Therefore, I mean, I don't know, in terms of the population, maybe a little bit less than the entire United Kingdom, or even more, I don't know. But a very, you know, high populated, of course, in India. And, you know, they have their own movie star, and they have their own movie production and everything. And one autumn, a very famous two actresses, ladies, and one man, and a big film production came to Sera Monastery to shoot. Sera Monastery, Namdoling Monastery. You know, it was interesting. It was really interesting. Although at that time, excitement going to watch movie was slowing down. You know, and particularly I wasn't that much interested to watch Karnataka, you know, the movie, mainly the Hindi movie. When I was interested, you know, I escaped many times to go there. So the, and it lasts almost a week or even longer, and everything is disrupted. And all the monks are going there and watching, going there. And there are many monks who are interested in that local movie, and they know these actresses, and they follow those. Like here, you know, young people follow their, you know, pop star and so forth. They also follow those monks. They know. Although we don't have modern time now, we have those, and those days don't have, but still they follow the things. And many of them completely disappointed seeing the real actresses. Yes. Honestly. And one of my friends, much junior, I mean, in terms of the age and much younger, and the class much junior, but we are very good friends because we are fan, you know, to run away to watch, watch cinema. And he stopped. He really stopped going to watch cinema. He thought, it's completely, you know,
fake.
Yeah, fake. And because, you know, they saw everything, putting makeup, all the dresses, and everything. He said, really, completely messed up in all the things. So that is here, you know. That is here, mm-hmm. You know. This when we start to, you know, have the understanding, the real understanding, then the appearance will change. What they appear to us, mm-hmm. And we say, yeah, mm-hmm. You know, I know it. It is not like that. Mm-hmm. And this is here the meaning of, you know, illusory like, mm-hmm. And this, you know, here. Very nicely illustrated in the, you know, the, and the traditional example is the you know, the magician who produces magic, and traditionally it said you know, although he or she, the magician, will see his or her production on the stage, but he or she will strongly disbelieve what is seen on the stage. And that is what here, you know, illusory-like appearance, the things and events, you know. So that is one thing which is quite useful to know. Now, page 23, look at the number 4. Then I will leave for question and answer. Number 4, which is page 23, it's saying, you know, therefore, the mode of knowing other phenomena as like the example, as an illusion, is as follows. For example, although the illusions emanated or conjured up by a magician are from the start empty of being horses and elephants, and these are the traditional examples. Appearances of horses and elephants are, you know, undeniable case, and that is cast. That is important, undeniable. You know, that those people who have realized emptiness, and when they come out from the realization of emptiness, you know, even though they say the appearance is not correct, it's wrong what appears to them, but they cannot reject the appearance. That's undeniable. You know, in that sense, like the, you know, amazingly good director produced, then you can't see where the, you know, the mistakes are. You see one after another, very, you know, consistently and very, and that is similar to that, you know, undeniable, and that is you know, important one, which is one of the, my main reason to bring that. Even the. You know, the practitioners who have direct realization of emptiness. Of course, during the direct realization of emptiness, during that meditative equipoise, they will not have any that kind of appearances. You know, only they have, you know, the emptiness, you know, during the meditative equipoise, direct realization of. As soon as they come out from the direct realization of emptiness, when they see their body, when they see their delicious cup of tea, they cannot deny the appearance. The appearance is there. Intrinsic, inherent appearance is there. That doesn't mean they grasp, but appearance is there. And that is the talking about the power of the appearance. You know, the power of the appearance. Appearance in this case, you know, inherent, intrinsic. And that appearance will not go away until, you know, until the practitioner, his or her mind, become the, you know, the Nyamjung Ngojik in Tibetan, it says, you know, to become the meditative equipoise and post-meditation in one entity. In one entity in the sense of the person doesn't have any that kind of alternation in his or her life, in his or her the activities. There's no alteration,
alternation.
Yeah, there's no alternation. That will become only when you go on the real holiday. That means enlightenment. When there's no alternation, equipoise and, the post-meditation, post-meditation, if I literally translate it from Tibetan. Nyamje, nyam, that means nyamsha, that is meditative. Equipoise, jetop, that means post-meditation, post-equipoise. In other words, all the time, it is in a meditative equipoise, but that doesn't mean, the enlightened beings will not perceive, not see, the things and events. They do see things and events, but don't ask how they see it. Just so you should know that although the phenomena, person, and so forth are from the start empty of inherent existence, that is, of their being objectively established by way of their own entities, it is undeniable that they appear as if established that way. So this paragraph is quite important to pay attention, to read it again by yourself and try to understand it further on this paragraph. Okay, now I thought I'm going to give you quite a long period for question and answer, but it's already 8:40. So I will leave it here. And tomorrow morning we are going to go a little bit more in this section, and particularly there are one or two areas which I would like to draw your attention. And page 29 is the selflessness of the phenomena. In this case, page 29. If we are able to establish initially in this stage selflessness of the phenomena, a person, and structure all the arguments, and then the next part, the selflessness of the phenomena, will be not that difficult to read and to understand. So that's what I'm aiming to go up to there, in this retreat. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Actually, in terms of the meditations, we've been doing the meditations on trying to identify the object of negation.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
But now you've introduced these different stages. What would be your advice on how to go about it? Do we kind of stick with the first type of meditation until when would we know when it's time to move on?
There is a section which I'll save for tomorrow. It is end of this reading. But your question is a practical question. I think it's a really good practical question. Usually, my suggestion, not in this particular topic, my suggestion, people say, I want to learn meditation to cultivate shamatha. What is your suggestion? I usually say, first of all, to learn a structure, how you're going to, what are the steps, how to follow, and maybe, for some time, just to even though your stage may not be the last stage, but just have a glance meditation or go in order to keep the structure that you have learned from the retreat or from somebody that taught you. Then start from the beginning. Start from the beginning. Now you know the direction where you're going to go, how the steps are, how many steps are, and roughly from the retreat from somebody, reading from somebody taught you. So then really start from the beginning to go stage by stage until each stage you gain some kind of certainty. Then move to the next. But don't need to wait until you gain proper realization. Go to, that will be, I would say, not glance, that will be more grounded meditation. But then you come back again, then do a proper, you know, the first one is, glance one is not to forget the instruction or the steps that you learn. How to cultivate, in this case, you know, the meditation on emptiness. But then the second one is to gain some little bit taste to the each stage. Gain a little bit taste, you know, because if we wait until to get, you know, one of my teachers used to say, you know, the outer cover. If you choose, there's a little bit sweet, but it is not same as the inner one. So my usual suggestion is in the second round to have a little bit of taste in the each stage. And that way your interest will continue. Mm-hmm. Then third stage, really go to gain good experience to each stage.
Okay, thank you.
So that's a lifetime job.
I've got nothing much else.
But this one, you know, the observing and trying to know how, you know, we see, how we perceive I is something very, very worthwhile to do for the meditation of emptiness. Particularly to follow this kind of, you know, the sort of teachings, because, you know, to understand, say, the self emptiness relation to the I, relation to the self, then this is the way. This is the way. I mean, there are, you know, the some in the particularly related to the Highest Yoga Tantra, understanding of emptiness is, you know, have a slightly different approach. That's the different approach. But in here, that's the way. Then, according to the Tsongkhapa's, you know, the style, as he stated again and again, as I said before, that's the first step to really know, understanding how I appears to us.
And that's something we can do as we're just going about our daily life as well.
Oh, yes. Mm. I find, as I said, that's the best time. Mm. While we are sitting on the meditation cushion, we need to invoke our eye to see it. But in our daily life, if you are mindful enough, every chance, there are many chances to see how I appears. Mm. Any other question? Okay.
We've been talking in the group about the referent object of self-grasping, and sometimes it goes to grasping object.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying, well, the reference object is the doer, the experiencer, and the grasping object, when you say pot and nice pot, it's when we start exaggerating, and so we can, we know that even the first one is not the right thing. We still are mistaken, but maybe is not as mistaken as the grasping one, where we are maybe very obviously aware of the grasping object.
Okay, if I put it in a simple way, The grasping object is what is mistaken to the first one.
Yeah.
The referent object.
It is mistaken.
No, the referent object, the I or the self, which exists. The referent grasping object. This is very maybe the language may causing problem. that might be the case. In English, the grasping object may not be the right English. You know, it doesn't make sense. Maybe I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think
it sounds as if the object is doing the grasping.
Yes. That's
which isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So the but I'm translating from the direct from the Tibetan. Zindang Yu, Shen Yu, because I couldn't find any other or apprehended.
You say grasped object.
Grasped object. That's the one thing. Yeah. So the it would say the grasped object. Yeah. In that case, we need to say a little bit about the manner of grasping. This is mixed two together. Grasped object. It's in English. It sounds very much focusing the object.
Yeah.
Which doesn't exist, and here it also need to bring this the manner of grasping. That's why I try to. I know this doesn't make sense in English. Keep using grasping object. That's why it caused confusion. But anyway, grasped object. If you use that one, which does not exist, fiction. It is fiction relation to the referent object. Our mind believes our I or the self, the referent object, existed in that fashion, in the fashion of grasped object. Is it clear?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay, good. Yeah. Any questions? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the alternative to one and many, but we didn't talk about none. So
none.
Zero,
okay.
Yeah.
You mean none? That Indian bread.
You can have.
None. He said none.
Indian bread.
No, sorry, it was a joke.
Sorry, I'm teasing you. That's a good one.
If you have a logical argument and you're trying to prove that the things that there are and the things that there aren't, then there's one, there's many, but there's also the possibility of none. So how does that fit into what you said?
There is no, in according to this logic, there's no possibility of the third. That means none, yeah? There's no possibility. Any existing thing collapse into those two, either one or many. Therefore, none doesn't exist. What does that mean? It means if you search, taking any kind of existing things, any internal or external, which if you do as analysis, they all include into one of those two, either one or many. There's no third possibility. Okay? Sorry, I'll tease you. Okay. Yeah. Do you have one?
Yeah. I'll be dwelling on this innate and
Radhik, it is good you are here, not in a debating yard. If you are in a debating yard, and you are relatively new, monks didn't know your name that well, you will be nicknamed Innate and a Contrived Man. Sorry.
That's quite a long name.
The amazing Geshe in Amsterdam. There's a very nice, very learned Geshe in Amsterdam. And his nickname was Papa Sendok. Papa Sendok, that means, you know, the golden skin color. And he got this nickname. I mean, he's a great, great learned man, the Geshe. Although, you know, this is 40, 60 years we are talking about. When he was young, and these young monks who came from Tibet, and then they were located in Assam, and all the three, you know, and also some Nyingma and Kajut, also monks were there, and they were, you know, established in Assam. And of course, you know, they carry on the debating. And the Geshe Sonam, you know, constantly raised that issue, that subject, because in the Ornament of Clear Realization, the Abhisamma Alamkara, the eighth chapter, they mainly focus the Buddha's four bodies. And out of the four bodies, the emanation body, you know, the Nimanakaya, is explained with its 32 metta marks and 80 mana marks. And out of the 32 measure marks, one of the measure marks is, you know, the Buddha's skin color is like a golden skin color. And it has a debate. It has some sort of, you know, what is stated, the causes of having that kind of skin color and so on and so forth. And there are some debate. And it seems Geshe Sonam, he was young that time, raised this question again and again in the debate. And he was nicknamed, you know. And in his generation, other monks will, you know, in his generation, other monks will not know his name properly. I mean, we know his name because we can't dare to say him that name. So now, careful, you may nickname. So anyway, I'm teasing. Yeah. Okay.
I've been doing that. Because you ask first, so that you know, to not jump.
Yeah, yeah.
I have the tendency to
Kick
the boxes. And I was trying to just look at it, not going even any not analysis or anything like it. And so obviously I could see some of the moments. I don't know, maybe like when my dad died, when I think about him, like a strong feeling comes, sense of I. Or when I just kind of waking up and there's like almost nothing, there's some kind of feeling of being. So one I was thinking maybe it's a quiet, another one I was thinking maybe it's innate, I don't know yet. And then I was trying to think, when I look at one, it's like, are we trying to get at it as something as permanent? Because sometimes I'm feeling that they are kind of like impermanent, but impermanent cannot be obviously one we are negating, right? I'm not sure even I'm asking the proper question, but I just have sometimes feeling when I try to look at this sense of self-grasping, it's not always appearing to me as kind of solid permanent. Sometimes, I don't know, somehow I can see it as some kind of continuity, so I just don't know how to look at it.
Yes. I mean, it is what you're saying, as I mentioned yesterday, you know, that many of us have the same, that kind of notion, whether in that notion that, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, you know, my own experience, Tashi, who was here, you know, came to this country in 1994, and Tashi in 2017, you know, yes, when I rationalize, of course changes. I'm much older, grayer, and looking towards there, not towards down there, you know. But in the notion of Tashi has not changed. Has not changed Tashi. And when generally when you know natural occurrence of my identity has not changed. I mean, of course, in the time when I rationalize, then I can say, oh, of course, I've changed. So in that sense, there is a notion of permanent. There's a notion of unchanged entity in the identity. Mm. I mean, this terminology used saying permanent should not be understood as a very strict that kind of definition that we have what is permanent and what is impermanent should not be put into that kind of very, very strict under the definition. You need to look at more in the psychological, you know, the experiences and the seeing it. And that's quite useful to have a little bit loose, you know, not in the stick with the definition. Mm? Okay, we'll leave it here. Sorry?
Did you
get it? Yes, I have a nickname saying the bad mouth.
Yeah. Is that true?
It is true.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Bad mouth.
That means I constantly quarrel with the authorities.
You're still the same.
Sorry?
Changed at all.
No. Personality difficult to change. Even if you get older, that becomes stronger. I feel that. Oh yeah. Press is 2 times, yeah.
Page 191. From your sublime abode at the Tara, O Tara, born from the green Atatana, your crown adorned with Amitabha, Akshin, mother of the Buddhas of the three times, Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara. You who rescue all who are destitute, to you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. O my prostrate to the noble transcendent liberator, homage Tara swift heroic, eyesight lightning instantaneous, sprung from opening statements of the Lord of Three Worlds, here born lotus, homage she whose space combines a 100 autumn moons at fullest, blazing with light rays resplendent, as a 1,000 star collection. Homage, golden, blue, and lotus, water born in hand adorned, giving effort, calm, austerity, patience, meditation, her spirit. Homage, crown of Tathagatas, action, triumph without limit, relied on by conqueror's children, having reached every perfection. Homage, filling with Tutare, whom desire direction and space, trampling with her feet the seven worlds, able to draw forth all beings. Homage, worshipped by the All-Lord, Shaya Ami Brahma Marum, honored by the host of spirits, Gotras, Asyandavas, Yakshas, homage with her tray and pesans, destroying first magic diagrams, her feet pressing left and right in, blazing and a raging fire blast. Homage to a very dreadful, destroyer of Mara's champions, she with crowning lotus visage, who is slayer of all enemies. Homage at the heart of fingers, adorn her with three jewel mudra, like great masses all excited, all directions wheels adorn her. Homage, she's a joyous radiant, crowning meeting garlands of light, metal laughing with Tutare, subjugating Mara's devas. Hamishi able to summon all of Guardians Assembly, shaking frowning with her home sign, saving from every misfortune. Hamish crown adorned with crescent, man all ornaments most shining, Amitabha in the henna, sending out much light eternal. Hamishi with wreath ablaze like the unending fire abiding, righteous weapon joy surrounds you, troops of enemies destroying. Hamishi will strike the ground with her palm and with her foot beats it, standing with the letter home, the seven levels she does conquer. Hamish happy, virtuous, peaceful, she will still this peace nirvana. She endowed with omen soha, destroyer of the great evil. Hamishi with joy surrounded, tearing first bodies asunder, breathing organ knowledge mantra, arrangement of the ten letters, Hamish story with seed letter, of the shape of syllable, backward stamping shakes the three worlds, Meru, Mandara, and Vindhya, Hamish holding in her hand the heaven of Devalekho, with twice spoken Tara and totally dispelling poison. Hamishi whom gods and their kings and the Kinnaras do honor, hammered in all joyful splendor, she dispels her dreams and conflicts. Hamishi whose two eyes bright with radiance of sun and full moon, with twice Hara and two Tare, she dispels severe contagion. Hamish full of liberating, paralyzed a set of three natures, destroys hearts of spirits, yakshas, and rights corpses supreme Turin. These phrases with the rude mantras, and prostrations, that's our 21.
Page 35.
Yes, 36.
36, yeah, page 36.
Chajo Sancho.
Yeah.
God.